Julie Powell, it's a pleasure to meet you, having read your blog. My daughter Sarah sent me your blog. She said, this is the blog I should be writing about a woman and her life under cover of her cooking. Cooking all the recipes in Julia Child's cookbook for the blog Julie Julia. A brilliant idea. How did this happen?
We argue about this, my husband and I, a little bit. He thinks it's
the famous Eric.
The famous Eric. He is sure that he came up with it, and I'm almost positive that I did. But I think the short answer is that it was somewhat an act of desperation. I was pushing 30. I was a secretary in a government job. I was not doing the sort of writing that which is what I've always wanted to do, that I was doing. I was sort of in a rut in a lot of ways. It was one of those sort of panicked, in retrospect, sort of inspired, insane ideas. It doesn't make any kind of rational sense, but the book, but Mastering the Art of French Cooking, and I am using Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Volume 1, the 1967 edition, which was my mother's, and has been a sort of totemic object in my life. Not that I cooked out of it that much, though I have been for some years an enthusiastic cook, not a great cook.
Well-worn book, I see. Well-noted.
It has survived all sorts of disasters remarkably well. I congratulate the printers.
But what was the idea, the challenge, the sort of Mount Everest challenge?
Well, for one thing, it was going to provide, it works on several levels. On the one hand, it was going to provide me with a structure where I didn't have any. But on a deeper level, I think the book is a really important and deeply felt book. It's certainly, in the history of cooking in America, it is a milestone. In my personal history, it has always been there. It's an object that's always been there. It is and in its structure, it really lends itself to this sort of work. It really is mastering the art of cooking, right, of French cooking. And the way it's structured, you can go from beginning to end, and you learn these basic techniques, and you are able to apply them. For sort of practical reasons, there were good reasons why this was if you were going to have the crazy idea to cook your way through a cookbook, this is the one you'd do.
We'll come back to Julie Child. I want to know more about you, though, and also why a blog? Why not get a book agent and add another, cookbook to the shelf?
Oh, no. Well, first of all, I could never write a cookbook. And second of all, I could never get an agent, and at that point anyway. And third of all, as far as the blog goes, I had no idea what a blog was. I no clue. I'm completely technologically backwards. I had no idea. Eric definitely was the one who told me that these things existed, these online websites, weblogs. But for me, it seemed like once I knew what they were, it was an incredibly interesting medium. It was all the sort of daily work of keeping a diary or something, keeping a journal with this added pressure. You're out there. I've never been able
They're reading you.
Exactly. It's like jumping off the height. The first post that I ever did, it was just like, oh, God, it's out there. I can't take it back. And it's just like, for me, I've never been able to do something. I have to have someone watching me and criticizing me and pressuring me to move forward to do anything. It's like,
but when did you realize that it had to be about you? This was going to be kind of from the heart, from this anxious, scared, sexy, funny, interesting whole life of Julie Powell.
I was never interested in writing about having food be my primary subject, because there are a lot of people out there who write about food a lot better than I do. There are certainly a lot of people out there who cook food better than I do.
But
what
we'll see.
I
should say you've got brains in the pan on the stove as we speak.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, brains. We were going to bring Night of the Living Dead today to watch as a sort of theme evening, but we didn't get around to that. What interests me about food, other than eating it, is that it's a part of a real person's life. It's not, and that's also, again, we'll go back to Julia, but what I like about her is that she wants you to be able to eat well. You and me, and
right,
not someone on the Food Channel and not a great chef. She wants the person who has to shop at the, ShopRite discount grocery store. And
that's where she shops, yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea that eating well is a universal right, and that you can do it in the midst of the daily hell that most of us live through, especially when you live in an outer borough of New York City. What interested me about writing about food was not so much describing the glorious smells off of a wonderful plate of organic zucchini with Italian olive oil or whatever. I mean, that's great, but that's not what I feel about food. What I feel about food is how the creating of it and the shopping for it and the eating it and everything else about it is an essential part of my daily life and is informed by everything else I do, and vice versa. So,
we'll come back to the food, but mm-hmm. what about the angst, the real life of this young woman in Queens? When did you decide to make that part of the blog?
Well, I think, again, I mean, it's part of the medium. When you're writing every day at 6 o'clock in the morning, I get up and that's the first thing I do, your barriers are kind of down and you don't have the editing. And there is no editing. I write for 45 minutes. It's on the blog. That's it. I mean, it's very much out of my mouth into the cyberverse. and that's, you know, it's sort of the way I do things. I'm not very good at planning.
For people who tuned in late, I mean, do you mm-hmm. want to summarize the Julie story? Who
sure.
is this woman?
Sure. As I say, now I have gone ahead and turned 30.
Brave of you. Go ahead.
Thanks. I thought so. I am Texan by birth. I came up here to the Northeast for college and have been in New York since I graduated pretty much entirely with my now husband. And, you know, it's a typical sort of young artist in New York. I did theater and writing was what I was doing, and I was not doing it very successfully or very well. And there's a lot of, like almost everyone else I know my age here, it's a lot of being lost and not knowing anything about your direction. I was temping for years and years and years. That's actually how I got the job I have now. They just liked me enough to hire me permanently. But a lot of worry about why am I in New York? Why am I torturing myself with the commute and the unair-conditioned apartments and the, you know, making $50,000 a year and still not being able to pay my bills and all of the rest of it. And I think, for me, this idea that came to me, and I still find it sort of wondrous that it did, and sort of bizarre and irrational, became a way for me to sort of channel that frustration that I was having into a format that was creative and fun and humorous. I wasn't really expecting anyone to actually read it, I don't think. There's some way to like put stuff out there. And I find, like, actually it's sort of interesting. This is coming out of my mouth as I think it, but an interesting parallel between the cooking and the writing is that when you write about something horrible or something that scares you or something that pisses you off, and you're able to write it, and I, you know, I write fairly humorously. It's sort of my tone, and I'm able to kind of laugh at the stuff that I was, you know, I'm on the subway at 1 o'clock in the morning, screaming, like punching the subway cars when they come through, and you know, just throwing a fit and looking like
you were.
Oh yeah, all the time. I'm a lunatic on the subway station, and you know, and nothing. I can't see the humor in that. I'm so livid. I can feel my blood pounding in my veins, and I'm so angry. But if I go home and I write about it and I make a funny story out of it, and I'm able to just, all right, okay, this is not the end of the world here. And it's a really, for me, it's been a really positive way to sort of channel that negative energy, which I have a great deal of, into something that's fun for other people and for myself. Not unlike cooking and finding things that you're worried about, things you don't want to eat, things you're scared of, brains. And through handling it, through cooking it, through dealing with it intimately, you come to a place where even if it's never going to be your favorite thing, you've come away with a story for yourself. You've come away with a taste and a set of sensations, and you've made something good out of your worries and your fears and your lack of experience. So,
before we get to the food goddess, yeah. I want to know who your writing goddesses are, your artistic goddesses, who your favorite novelists and poets are.
Oh, gracious. Well, it does. It changes a lot. Right now, it tends to a lot of the time be who I'm reading. I just finished the Claire Tomlin, Jane Austen biography.
I knew Jane Austen was in the back of this. I swear.
I mean, I didn't at all until I was reading the biography, and I feel very much. I have this feeling of. I mean, I've always loved Jane Austen. I love her books, and I love the sensibility behind them. But reading about her and how she wrote and what she was doing while she was writing sort of makes me feel more closer to her. So I'm an admirer of Jane Austen, also an admirer of Claire Tomlin, who wrote the biography. On the other hand, very sort of my maybe obvious person I've been reading a lot and enjoying recently is Nicholson Baker.
Yes.
Specifically, the last book I read, You and I, which is his homage and deconstruction of Updike and his relationship with him. And, of course, very obvious comparison to Earth, what I'm doing right now, you know, really getting into someone's that you admire's head and your interpretation of what they're like.
It's a wonderful book. The Sex of Literature too.
Oh yes, no, he's fabulous. It's a bit difficult. I was actually just discussing this with a friend of mine. It's very difficult to read, to not be reading, you know, the next great new novel that's out. You know, you read all the Zadie Smiths and you read the. I mean, not that I love Sadie Smith, but
we love White Teeth.
We love White Teeth. I haven't actually read The Autograph Man. It's on my shelf. It's up there next
Mine
to
too.
Read. But then, how many of these books are going to be as good as Bleak House? Like, I haven't read Bleak House. I should probably read it before I go on to the next great new novel of the moment. So it's sort of, you know, judging your maintaining your reading life. The one great thing about having a subway commute every day is that you always have time to read your book. Eric now walks to work, and he doesn't get to read as much anymore.
Who are your favorite food writers? Is MFK Fisher on your list? Do you read Ruth Reichel? Do you read Johnny Appel?
I read all of those people. MFK, of course, is seminal in a lot of ways to me. He's one of the first food writers that I read seriously. I have gone back to her since and not been as enthralled with her as I was initially, but I still think that what she does really well that I very much admire is that the food is a reflection of her life rather than the food being this sort of cut-off and utopian end of itself. It's a way for her to get into her personal experiences, which I find lovely. I don't consider myself a food writer. I have taken food as my subject for this last year, or at least as a structure rather than a subject. But I find too much food writing to be, as I say, a little utopian, a little unrealistic, a little privileged, a little bourgeois, to use a terrible word. But I feel like I read food writers, so many food writers in the Times and in the this and that, and so many of them are, at the end of the day, writing this sort of food porn, which is fine. Porn in all its forms is wonderful. I have no problem with that. But with this undercurrent of classist or privilege, you know, yeah, I'm eating all this wonder, you know, Frances Mays, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, I'm living under the Tuscan sun, and oh, I'm so happy, and I'm eating these wonderful ripe tomatoes and I'm living in my Tuscan villa, yada yada
not.
Yada yada yada. Yeah, and you're not. You know, it's always the tone. Or oh, I know so much about, you know, this wonderful wine, $200 wine that da 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 da, and you don't. Like you don't know as much as I do. You don't taste as well as I do. You know, there's to me there's this real judgment in a lot of food writing, which is really unfortunate. I think that there are a few people out there I love. Laurie Colwyn, God bless her soul. He's a beautiful food writer. I have a soft spot in my heart for Jeffrey Steingarten. He doesn't take himself too seriously, which I think is fun. Amanda Hetzer is a wonderful writer. Gets a little precious for me a little sometimes. She wrote a story in the New York Times about the meals that she takes when she has to take a plane to Italy because the airline meals are so terrible. I'm like, oh, yes. I mean, and I actually try to do that now since I read that. Like, I bring my little food, but I still feel like sort of an ass when I do it. But you know, I find writers who write about food exclusively to get a little. I prefer writers who are writers who, when they take food as their subject, write about it really well. I like.
They should come to Queens and live over the pizza shop the way you do for a while.
Yeah, they should.
Is the blog the first draft of something else, or have we been first drafting all our lives to get to blog space here?
That's interesting. I think, in one sense, the blog is the first draft. The blog is my first inkling of a new way of writing. It's been very freeing for me, the rhythm of it, the dailiness of it, the uneditedness of it. Been very
freeing.
You look
so gleeful when you say no editors, thank you. That's a real bone of contention in journalism. I mean, that's why so many writers love blogs. There's nobody to take out your best line.
Right. Well, you know, and I actually, before I started blogging in my writing, and one reason that I started blogging is I was this great frustration about me, about the fact that I'd never finish anything. I have three-fourths of novels in my drawer.
Really?
I mean, I have, oh yeah, endless stuff, and none of it finished, and getting very paralyzed with actually self-editing. And, you know, I would pick apart the same chapter for weeks and months and years, and never get around to writing that last chapter.
A lot of great writers did it under serial deadline, a monthly edition, including Henry James and Thackeray and Dickens and Trollope.
Absolutely, and I think that it's, I think that it can be very freeing. I mean, and that's one great thing about having an audience with the blog is, if I don't write for 4 days, it's like a freak show. I mean, they freak out.
Something wrong. Something happened to Julie.
Is she in the hospital? I mean, I literally had someone asking, because I'd been ill, and I actually did take several days off because I was sick. I had the flu, and yeah, they're like, I wonder if she's in the hospital. Is she okay? You know, and I had one reader who's actually a friend of mine who called me, are you okay? And then went back on the blog. It's like, she's okay. I talked to her. She's fine. So, I mean, it's definitely, unlike Dickens or someone who's posting their readership for a vast critical readership, it's more like I have, like, 2,000 mothers reading me every day. How is she? Is she okay? I want to hear from her.
Julie Powell in Queens. Cooking brains, and cucumber, baked cucumber, part of her doing all the recipes of Julia Child blog. It's nice to be here.
Baked cucumbers are one of my many revelations in this book.
Let's talk about the great Julia.
Oh,
she's an important person to me and to, I must say, my daughters and a lot of women, more than we know, I think. I call her, you know, she's one of Camille Paglia's pre-war feminists, one of these mighty women who never felt she was competing with anybody, much less men, an incredibly strong person. And I think she, you know, I think she's among the unsung but great feminist heroes, in that she showed American women how to be strong, how to be tough, how to have fun, how to deal with pleasure at home. My daughter Amanda says what she really did was basically do a one-woman raid on all the great male secrets of French cooking. I mean, she brought the guys' tools and tricks and sauces and traditions home, where mom could do them for supper.
Mm-hmm. Julia brought it home to us and brought it, absolutely, made it available, made a lot of things available, not just the techniques, which of course are wonderful to possess, but as you say, the idea that you can, that food is for all of us, and that we can eat wonderfully and do a lot of things ourselves, women particularly. And I think it was a great point that you made, that she's a wonderful feminist role model, not because but because she never thought of herself as, I have the right to do this, and then it seems so simple for her, but it's not.
It came to her naturally. For one thing, she's 6'2" tall, and she also had remarkable parents and brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But she told me one time that she came home with a 48 on a school paper, and her mother said, "That's all right, dear. Maybe next time you'll get a 50. So, don't worry about anything." Was sort of the rule with Julia.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she's obviously brilliant and strong in a serious kind of way. But how much of your fascination with her is the cooking? How much is the kind of the persona, this sort of admiral on deck?
Well, it's funny. I'd never watched her show before I began. I now watch it rather regularly on reruns but I had never watched it before I began the show. Julia was this book, which I never cooked out of, but I'd always possessed, and, you know, Dan Aykroyd gushing blood and stuff. I knew who she was, but I didn't understand who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that attracted me to this book is this wonderful sense. It's a very generous book. There are a lot of great cookbooks out there by great cookbook writers, and even, you know, Nigella Lawson or whatever, who I actually think is great. But they're about them, like How to Eat is about Nigella Lawson. And, you know, The Essential Cuisines of Mexico is about Diane Kennedy and about her take on the food. Julia doesn't assert herself in the book in any way. It's not about her. It's about the food. And yet this great joy in it comes out and this great generosity. She's a wonderful teacher because it's like she's very specific and she has this great passion. But it's like, you know what? It's going to be okay. If you can't use sweetbreads, then you know, if you can't get the clarified butter, then don't use the clarified butter. You know, whatever. She is forgiving and generous and yet incredibly passionate.
Her book, as you say, is about the food. Your blog, dear girl, is about you. And I'm hoping you find fame, fortune, total world takeover on this path. How many book offers have you had? Do you have an agent yet? What do you want to I want to know also about your audience.
Mm-hmm.
Not only how big is it, I mean, you're hot as can be, but how big is it and what do people say?
I think, well, as far as the book deal thing and the agent thing, I mean, there are offers on the horizon. I don't think there's anything definite yet.
Hillary isn't worried about the record yet.
I don't think Hillary's going to be worried anytime too soon about this. Or Ann Coulter, even. But there's some interest. There's enough interest to keep me excited on the edge of my seat all the time, which is, I mean, I had no idea. This is ridiculous. And as you say, my audience, I think, is the reason for it. And they are often women, though not entirely. They tend to be liberal.
Feminist guys, probably?
Probably some of those. I have a very vocal and loyal following. For some reason, they find me, my blog, a sort of great starting point. But they found each other through me, which is kind of cool.
We're talking a virtual community here.
Absolutely. There's actually a professor who contacted me about doing a paper on the Julia Project and the extent to which it is or is not a virtual community. She put a web survey on the blog and had people go to it and answer questions about how they did or did not feel that they belonged, if they know people on the blog personally, if they don't, how they feel as a member of this community.
What's your own answer to the question?
I don't think there's any question that there's a sense of community, and the way I know is that there have been a couple of examples of sort of interlopers on the blog, you know, trolls who come on and say nasty things, blah, blah, blah. And I swear, it was fascinating. There was this one person who came on who just was really trying to get my goat. And in the comments, you know, in the comment section. And I don't have a problem. I didn't have a problem with anything he was saying personally. But it kind of shut down the conversation in the comments, and people weren't talking, and nobody was saying anything to him. It was this sort of cold, chilly silence where he wrote these bizarre non sequiturs into the comments. And finally he said something that kind of, you know, whatever, pissed me off a little bit. And so I wrote something back. It was very kind. It was not like, I just sort of said something about, hey, maybe you should get your own blog. And and immediately, like within moments after I had written that, everyone on the planet, everyone who's sitting around lurking me was like, see, someone's paying attention to you. Now will you just leave? And they were going to like, they were just, it was like a school of piranhas. I was scared the poor guy was going to get torn apart. So I have to jump in the middle of it and say, okay, it's fine, it's great, but, you know, maybe you really...
Why don't you play with the other kids now?
And then as soon as I did that and sort of set a tone of kindness and of openness, everyone else was like, yes, you're right. You know, we really appreciate you being here, but maybe you should start your own blog and leave the address here and we'll come to visit, you know, and you were... You can see how these tides of, you could sense it below the surface. And then the second I said something, everyone just, and you can really feel there's a rhythm to it. And there's I think there's a community. I think that people are almost reading each other's minds without, and I'll have conversations with people who aren't commenting, like with friends of mine, who just will express, oh yeah, that Joshua, oh, I hated him. And, so there, I think there definitely is a sense. Community and its positive and negative aspects. It's
What is this about? I mean, there's never been anything like this before. It's not like fans of a soap opera or readers of the same book. There is real contact here. It's unfolding mysteriously in real time all over the world. Nobody sees anybody, and yet it's kind of deep. Would you want to meet these people? Would you want to have them over for a barbecue? Would you want to know about their lives or not?
I'm planning on inviting everyone for the final weekend.
Shea Stadium?
No,
the final weekend is approaching too, isn't it?
It is. We are at 24 days, I believe.
Hi.
Yeah, we're
feeling the pressure?
A little bit. We're going to make it, actually. I feel confident at the moment. Today, I feel confident. I go back and forth on that. But I think that I am going to be inviting people over to the house. If they can, it's just like Janis Joplin says, look, if you can find my house, I'll give you a drink. So that's sort of the theory here. There have been a couple of times where I've realized, wait, you know, I have sort of put myself out there in an odd way. And I'm amazed at how sort of nice and normal and cool everybody seems. I guess that's the wonder of the internet, that you put something out there that is this total bizarro niche thing to do, and they find you. People who have similar interests to you find you. I do think it's a really remarkable technology. And
I think you're right. I think you're a remarkable writer and a remarkable woman, and it is pure fun to meet you and to watch you unstuff your cucumbers, Julie. Of Julie Julia, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you here to watch me.